It is time to bring in Arthur Schwartz of the Food Maven. Arthur, of course, joins us on a Monday morning, and we talk about food, glorious food. And today, we'll talk about lockdown and food. Good morning, Arthur.
Good morning. Well, it's a month that I'm in the house now, and I have been to my local Safe supermarket twice. I don't want to go in there again, even though I know it's safe enough. So I find, along with some friends, we're discovering alternative ways of shopping. You know, shop, I always used to say, I love to shop as long as I don't have to try it on. So anything that I don't have to try on, which is, of course, food, and furniture, and art. Anyway, so that's over, because you can't go out to a market and look and smell and feel the food. You can't. It's not a sensory experience anymore. It's like what you need. And I don't know, maybe I can find some sensory satisfaction in shopping online, but so far not. In fact, I'm desperate today because we are now, except for a head of romaine lettuce and a box of frozen spinach, we are out of fruit and vegetables. And that, I find, is the hardest thing to keep in, you know, to eat, basically. meat, I found, you know, I think I know I've mentioned this on the air. I ordered meat from De Braga, a commercial butcher that also sells retail and delivers. $10. You can even, I think in Sharon even, it would only cost $10 to get it delivered. And it's extraordinary meat, and I'm very happy to have De Braga. I ordered these steaks for my birthday. That's already a month ago. And I recently ordered other steaks and pork chops. And, in fact, I even like their Italian sausage, and I'm really picky about Italian sausage. But I thought these were pretty good, a little finely ground for my taste, but very good taste. And, by the way, less expensive, the sausage were, than the sausage were around the corner from me in the supermarket. Well, fancy supermarket. Anyway, I discovered this morning a new, I think it's new, but maybe not, a delivery service called Mercato, M-E-R-C-A-T-O. Which is market in, I think, Spanish, but it's also in Italian, Mercato. And they deliver from stores you wouldn't, well, these are stores that don't do their own delivery, obviously. Sahadi, which is the Middle Eastern store on Atlantic Avenue, the famous Sahadi, which, by the way, now has a second store in what's called Industry City here in Brooklyn. That's the old Bush Terminal Markets, are now called Industry. For the old-timers listening, what used to be, I still think of it as Bush Terminal, but it's called Industry City. And they are delivering from some really first-class places here in Brooklyn. One of my favorite produce stores, Three Guys from Brooklyn. It used to be an Italian neighborhood, and there's another circus fruit five blocks away, which also used to be an Italian neighborhood. Now it's a multi-ethnic neighborhood, so they have all kinds of produce that you don't get in one place usually. So there are Chinese people shopping there, there are Italians shopping there, Middle Easterners, Orthodox Jews. I'm scared to go there. I think people are probably keeping their distance, but you don't know. I have neighbors who've gone out to markets where they thought people were probably keeping their distance, and they were not. And the stores didn't seem to care, so we don't want to do that. Anyway, I can order. I just see this morning that I can get a local delivery for $9, a very inexpensive produce store. Start, so I'm happy to pay the $9 for delivery. This is all through Mercato, and the prices at, I must say, that they're posting on the website are competitive with any market, truly. Around the corner, I pay at least 99 cents a pound for Idaho potatoes, sometimes more, $1.09. Here, they're 55 cents. So, you know, I look at key ingredients to see what the prices are. But they also have a butcher shop that I know is excellent, Paisano's, that's in Cobble Hill, not far. So they'll deliver it to me, too. They tell you, they're not going to deliver it to me, I see. You have to be within 0.7 miles to get a delivery from Paisano. Anyway, but there are markets within. I can't get a delivery from Bianqui either. Bianqui is this a really great bakery in Cobble Hill. I guess that would be Cobble Hill. My cousin Erica, the food writer, says it has the best croissant in the city. I would say it's the second best croissant. I like mine. Anyway, my bakery is closed, and I was wondering why. Because I mean, it's a restaurant / bakery, but you would think the bakery part would stay open because they were selling wholesale to some different markets. Anyway, I'm going to peruse this and see what I can find. I basically am just going to get produce probably from the market that I know and trust.
You know, it's interesting that you say that. I was in a supermarket the other day, just picking up three items. I had my mask on, and I did have gloves on. But this is no lie, Arthur, and this is something that comes out of a nightmare scenario. About 15 feet away from me, a guy without a mask sneezed.
There you go.
And I said to him,
on the food? Did he sneeze on the food?
No, he was in the middle of an aisle, but I said to him, that can get you killed in a supermarket. That can, and I couldn't believe
it. How did he react?
He just looked at me and walked away. I just couldn't believe it.
I know. Well, listen, you are in an area where there probably is not a high incidence of the virus. I don't know. I haven't checked it out. You can, by the way, find numbers of cases by zip code, I discovered, because I felt and still feel that my niece in St. Louis and her husband, who owns a delicatessen in St. Louis, are not taking this as seriously as they should. My nephew's delicatessen has remained open, and even though he usually closes for Passover, he is open for Passover, because business is so good. Anyway, aside from my family, I even got a message from a Facebook, I will put this in quotes, friend, not really, but somebody who follows me, I guess, and he's in Oklahoma, and besides that, this man has probably never looked at a map to know where New York even is. He lives on a different planet than we do, and apparently never even listens to the news. So there's a whole world of people out there who don't understand what's going on in places where we do have a lot of virus. Now, my particular community has very low incidence of the virus. I looked it up by zip code. But that's because we're a highly educated community where, in fact, a lot of people have the ability to work from home because they do work that allows them to do that. In fact, I have friends who, in fact, do work from home, even when there is no virus. They're, of course, getting a little cabin fever because it's hard to go out. But their work life continues as usual. As somebody who doesn't work, my daily life has changed dramatically. So, and as far as my cooking goes, it's interesting. I'm not poor, but I now understand, I think, a little bit better what truly poor people go through. Like, I had a dozen eggs. Do I use these to eat, like because for dinner, in fact, we did have matzah brei the other day. It is Passover. I did think ahead to buy a box of matzah before I couldn't go shopping anymore. So I matzah brei. Or can I use it for baking? Or can I use, you know, you start parceling out the eggs, because this dozen eggs has to last you a while. Another one is flour. There's no flour in our supermarkets. By the way, none of the supermarkets that I can avail myself of are delivering anymore. They were at the beginning, but it's now a month that we're closed down. So Whole Foods has stopped delivering. Union Market, which is my market around the corner, has stopped delivering. Fresh Direct, you cannot get an appointment with Fresh Direct to get a delivery. I don't care what anybody says. I have somebody in my life who's a know-it-all, who said, oh, you have to get on at noon because they post the new day of delivery times at noon. Well, it's not true. I've been on more than one day before noon and until well after noon, and still no new date. So no more Fresh Direct. It's like that. So you have to find alternative ways to shop and to cook. So yesterday, I do have a lot of meat in the house, so that's not become an issue to Braga to the rescue. Also D'Artagnan. I noticed some of my neighbors in the building have been getting D'Artagnan deliveries, another great source of meat and poultry that you can mail order. Another one would be Heritage Foods. Look up Heritage. They're terrific also. These are all very high-end products for which you pay a premium. There are probably some not-so-high-end products that you don't have to pay so much for, but I'm willing to pay that for meat. And really, it goes a long way. I think I spent like $250 on my last order, but that was enough for 8 meals. So that's not so bad.
No, it's $30 a meal.
For two men who eat too much. So yesterday, though, I wiped out every last vegetable that was in the bin. Of course, there was some carrots. There was some celery, which I know, by the way, from my life and from writing a book called What to Cook When You Think There's Nothing in the House to Eat, that celery never lasts as long as you think it should. So, you know, maybe a week or 10 days it's good in the bin. So I had carrots and celery, of course, and, of course, onions. I also had a couple of shallots that I thought, well, it's time to use them up. And then I had, here's something I never would have done before. But we had, I bought this big, nice head of broccoli. And one night, and usually I would cook up the whole thing, including the stems. We love the stems. I pare them down. I cut off the tough ends. I pare them down with my vegetable peeler, and then I cut them into slices or sticks, whatever. But instead of doing that the other day, we just ate the tops, and I saved the stems, figuring they'll come in handy, and they did. So I prepped them and I made them. I diced everything about, I would say, in half inch pieces, not too tiny, and then the onion, and then I added an onion because the two shallots were not enough of that flavor. What else did I put in there? Potato. I had like maybe 8 ounces of little red new potatoes, and I cut them up, washed them, and cut them into quarters or eighths, depending on the size of the little potato. And I started this by sautéing my onions, and I gave that a few minutes. And then I added all the other vegetables, which I measured. I mean, it all came to, without the potato, it came to a heaping 4 cups of other vegetables. And then the potato was, you know, maybe 2 cups at the most, and a cup and a half to 2 cups. And I put that all in my sauté pan, my deep-covered sauté pan, and stirred with, I told you, I think a good several glugs of olive oil. And I tossed that around in the hot oil for a few minutes, covered the pan, put the heat on medium, and let the vegetables steam. for about 10, 15 minutes. You can lift the cover and toss them around once or twice if you want. You don't want them to stick to the bottom of the pan. If you feel anything sticking, then reduce the heat a little bit, because the whole point here is to, as the chefs would say, sweat the vegetables. And once the vegetables are sweated, or is that the past tense?
Sweat.
No, yeah, once sweat. They're sweat, take the cover off and either continue to cook over medium heat until they're really tender. And I smush them down a little here and there. I like it when it browns, when some of them brown and get caramelized. And for that, you need to raise the heat and pay more attention. It depends on your mood. I was not in the mood to pay attention yesterday. So, and then I made pork chops by a new method, something I never would do because we never, you know, they're too precious to do something new with. But these were extraordinary-looking pork chops, but I didn't like the new method, which I found online at Bon Appetit magazine, where you start the pork chops in a cold pork chops in a cold black iron skillet over high heat, covered for 4 minutes, and then turn them over and brown them for another 3 minutes, and then stick them in a 400-degree oven. Now, I have to say, I probably left them in the oven too long. They were very, very thick chops. So I thought, well, 10 minutes, but I think maybe 7 or 8 would have been better. Still, I don't think I like this method. I have cooked pork chops several times recently, and I'm going to swear by fried pork chops.
Yeah, no, it's one of those things that tastes
breaded,
better. Yeah.
Fried pork chops. And I measured my oil the other day when I did this, and I used literally 3 tablespoons of oil to fry 2 enormous pork chops. They were sensational, and I don't think that that was too much oil. I mean, I measured the oil when I put it in and when I took it out. And if your oil is hot enough when you put them in and you keep it hot, they're not going to absorb very much oil.
You know, it's interesting when you talked about dicing up the vegetables. I inadvertently discovered a new way to make potato salad that I really like, and that is taking onions and celery and sweating them down, okay? Oh. And then those little round white potatoes, or they can be
yes.
The purple potatoes, in another pot, I quarter them, and I put them in water. With some garlic, just because I like to put garlic in water. And when they're done, I then take them, and when they cool off, I put them in with the onions and the celery, a little salt and pepper, and I make and then I put a little olive oil on it, and it makes the greatest cold potato salad in the world.
Why not? I like that. I mean, I would eat it warm, too.
Warm, you'll eat the whole pot.
But I'm trying not to eat too many potatoes. Bob is on a potato jag here.
But cold, you don't eat the whole pot because it's a little heavier. But,
so
good.
I'm going to do that. Yeah, it's like my hash.
Yeah.
So I can't seem to find all-purpose flour. I have a bag of whole wheat flour in the cupboard. And I have just enough all-purpose, like, to make breaded pork chops or something, to thicken the sauce, I guess. I don't have much left. But I did have a lot of cake flour. So I'm thinking, well, maybe I should try to make something. I was really going to make bread, but the fact is I have frozen pizza dough in the house, so I do have some dough. Can't get yeast either, by the way. Everybody's baking bread. Anyway, so I'm thinking maybe I should bake a cake with cake flour. And what can I make with cake flour? And I'm looking around, and I finally come up with a chocolate chiffon cake that I found online. And now the decision is, do I want to sacrifice 7 eggs?
That's right.
To make a chiffon cake.
That's right.
And the answer was,
no.
We need dessert. Yes.
Oh, no, yes. Oh, okay.
Yes, of course. So I made this cake, And it really is a great chiffon cake. You know chiffon cake?
Yeah.
They're oiled. That, another thing was, chiffon cake only uses oil, not butter. And I didn't want to sacrifice a lot of butter for a cake either. So this had everything I wanted ingredient-wise, except I did have to use 7 large eggs, which you separate. Now, another thing I like about this cake is, except for beating the egg whites, and you will have to beat 7 large egg whites with, 7 large egg whites, you can mix everything with a whisk. And first you're going to make the chocolate flavor, which is a half a cup of baking cocoa. Well, a half a cup of cocoa. By the way, this is a British recipe, so some of the ingredients are looking British. I'm not going to even tell you. I'll just tell you in American. So you take a half a cup of cocoa. I happen to have some great cocoa in the house, so I use my great cocoa for this, a half a cup, and you dissolve it in 3/4 of a cup of boiling water and set that aside to let it cool. It's going to be like a chocolate syrup. And then combine the dry ingredients, cake flour, 1 3/4 of a cup of cake flour, 1 3/4 of a cup of sugar. And by the looks of this recipe, I knew it wasn't going to be too sweet, and in fact it was not. 1 1/2 teaspoons of baking soda. Now, somebody's going to say, you don't mean baking powder? No, I don't mean baking powder. I mean baking soda. And the reason you use soda in a chocolate cake like this is that the cocoa is high in acid. And so you need the alkaline soda to balance it. And also it acts as a slight leavening. Really, the leavening here is egg whites. But in any case, 1 1/2 teaspoons of baking soda, a full teaspoon of salt. And I used my salty sea salt, and it wasn't too salty. And that's your dry ingredients. You just mix those together with a whisk, 1 3/4 of a cup of cake flour, 1 3/4 of a cup of sugar, 1 1/2 teaspoons of baking soda, and a teaspoon of salt. And then you do your wet ingredients, which are 7 egg yolks. You remember you have 7 large eggs separated. So the 7 egg yolks you blend with a whisk with a half a cup of oil, whatever neutral vegetable oil you use. I use canola oil usually. And 2 teaspoons, and I made 2 generous teaspoons of vanilla. Mix the wet ingredients together, the yolks, the oil, the vanilla, and then stir in the dry ingredients. And I did this all by hand with a whisk. It's very easy to do. And then I did use... And by the way, if you want to put a pinch of cream of tartar, a big pinch of cream of tartar into your egg whites, you can do that. So you take your 7 egg whites with your pinch of cream of tartar, if you want. It makes it more stable. And beat them until they're stiff. And that means until you can turn the bowl over upside down and the egg whites don't move. They're really stiff. And then fold, and now, by the way, you really do need an enormous bowl to do this in. It's not your normal large bowl because there's a large volume here of egg whites and batter. So fold carefully your egg whites into the batter. In fact, I poured the batter down the side of the bowl with the egg whites and then did my work. I might do it the other way around next time. I don't think it matters. It might be easier to just put the egg whites on top of the batter and fold them in. But carefully fold them in. You still there?
Yep.
Oh, I just dropped the phone. and that's it. This goes in an ungreased, 10-inch tube pan. Do not use a bundt pan that is crenellated. It will be impossible to get this out. What you need is a smooth-sided, and I have this. In fact, it's my Passover pan mainly because I bake my, I have to say, famous Passover walnut torte cake in this pan. But you put it in the pan, ungreased, and put it on the lowest rack in a 325-degree oven. It's a slow oven. For at least an hour. I found mine took about 64 minutes. But at least an hour. It could be 64 or 65 minutes. As soon as you take it out of the oven, turn it upside down. Now, my pan has legs because it was meant to be turned upside down. If your pan does not have legs, we're talking about a tube pan here. Yeah. Mine's a removable bottom tube pan. Which, by the way, is, I think, an indispensable piece of baking equipment. I do a lot of things in that, and I have different sizes. Turn it upside down. But what my grandmother used to do when she had these pans, and I still have them, that don't have the legs, is you turn it upside down on a bottle, and you want to cool it upside down. It won't fall out, don't worry. Once it's cooled, you can then take a very sharp knife and go all around the perimeter of the pan, and if it's a false bottom pan, it'll pop right out. I don't even attempt to take it off of the tube in the middle until I've taken out several slices. It's a homey cake anyway, because it's a mess if you try to remove it from the tube without having a few slices off already. But again, you use a long, sharp knife. By the way, this cake recipe came with an icing recipe, which I didn't use, and I'm glad I didn't because we don't like super sweet things. But if you like a really sweet, this is not a super sweet cake. It's a very chocolatey cake. It's fluffy. It's a little chewy. We both thought it was a little better on the second day. You know, you won't be able to resist it the first day, but wait till the second day. You probably get 15 or more servings out of this cake. It's a big cake. It took us several days to finish it, even though we loved it. And the icing that they give you is a butter sugar icing. It increases the sweetness exponentially because for a third of a cup of melted butter, you stir in 2 cups of confectioner's sugar, 2 ounces of melted unsweetened chocolate, vanilla, hot water. I don't know. One of these days I'll try it. It really looks like a good buttery glaze. And you pour that over the cake, let it drip down the sides. It's a real pretty sight. And I'm sure delicious. So that's my coronavirus baking experience.
and coronavirus being locked down experience along with the baking.
Yeah, today it's raining on top of everything. So, I mean, I did not go out yesterday because even though it was gorgeous, but on a week, because you know what? It was so gorgeous and it was Sunday. There were a lot of people on the street, not necessarily keeping their distance, although I'm sure they were trying, but the thing is, you know, I didn't want to go take a walk and be playing dodgeball.
That's right.
So, you know, but during the week around here, the streets are deserted. So you can go out for a walk, even without a mask. It's okay. And, you know, I live on the park. So inside the park, I understand there have been some problems. But outside the park here, you can walk very comfortably and you can sit on a park bench. But today's raining.
All right. Well, you guys stay safe and healthy.
Yeah. Well, you know, we're discovering. Everybody I've talked to over the weekend has been discovering new ways to get deliveries. I have one friend who's like urging me to order from a local restaurant that's doing delivery. I said, you know, I wouldn't eat in there, well, even when it was
open. There was no virus.
When there was no virus. I'm not sure why I would want to order in their delivery to keep them in business.
All right. With that being said, stay safe and healthy, and we'll speak to you next week, Arthur.
All right. Take care.
Take care. Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, here on Robin Hood Radio, robinhoodradio.com on the web.